Hello, and welcome to another episode of EQCast. I'm your host, Christy Pritchard. Thanks so much for joining us on this unconventional sideshow of healing and self-betterment. This is where you can find unscripted conversations with authentic humans sharing their trials and triumphs around their emotional wellness journey. We keep it light, but we can get dark, so fasten your seatbelts. Welcome to the show. I've got my wonderful guest, Clayton Cutery, with me today, and he is a software engineer who studied 4 years of university in computer science, and he's a fellow podcaster as well, and he's also starting a course that helps you find your higher purpose in this life. So welcome, Clayton. Thanks so much for being here.
I appreciate you having me.
Anytime. So Clayton and I have actually been chatting for like the last, I would say, half an hour or so. I might cut into what we were talking about because it was recording and it was some pretty juicy, interesting stuff. So if you notice some chop in the video, that is why. But yeah, Clayton is living in Brazil currently. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your life down there and what you've been working on lately?
Yeah, so as you alluded to, we were talking about earlier, I found my way, man. Well, what am I doing right now?
Yeah, sounds good.
Right now I am just learning Portuguese, studying jiu-jitsu, and working on the course that you mentioned. And that's really what my main focus is, you know, being here in Brazil. Yeah. And so
life in Brazil right now,
it's pretty cool. I mean, like we were discussing it, with the retrograde and everything, it's been a little bit chaotic. Like, yeah. First time living by myself, don't know anybody. I'm like conversational in the language. So it's always, it's always an interesting event whenever I'm checking out just to even just pay for something.
Right. How are you learning, by the way? Like are you learning through a program or through like a book or something?
Duolingo is super helpful. I'll give them a little bit of a plug.
Oh. Yeah. That wasn't on purpose, by the way, but, yeah, I'll check them out because I really want to learn Spanish just in case we have to flee the coop.
Yeah, and here's a little tidbit. When you're learning a language, I think the biggest issue that people do is they will associate, and it's difficult with Duolingo because this happens, but you associate word to word. So like hello is hola. So you associate hola to hello. The issue is that it's going to always kind of stop you in a sense from becoming fluent, because what happens is that you want to say hi, so you think in your head hi, and then you need to think, what's the word for hi? Hola. As opposed to if you're in English, it's just hi, you know. Yeah. So then whenever you're kind of so what's the solution to this is if you're going through something like Duolingo, you know, I will usually read the sentence of whatever it is, see that like image of that when I would use that sentence. Mm-hmm. And then just kind of like repeat that sentence in my target language over and over.
Right. So it's more almost imagery based. I guess it depends on how you learn. I'm a visual learner myself, and that's why languages kind of eluded me throughout my childhood.
Right.
I studied Spanish because I went to high school in California, and Spanish was a part of my life for 4 years. And I took it in university, and it's still like, I go, well, unless I'm back and hit the tequila pretty hard and then somehow I'm fluent, but other than
it's crazy.
It's weird how that's a thing though. And it's like, I know, because they're talking back to me, so I know that I'm not completely belligerent.
Yeah.
It's quite funny. But it's still, it's because I'm a visual learner. So thank you for that, because that's a pretty good piece of information just to visualize your damn self. Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. We actually had initially, when we first connected on Telegram like a couple of days ago, we had talked about Bitcoin. And I still do want to touch on that because it's something that I'm learning myself. And I know we didn't talk about it in the first part of our conversation, but I have been learning a fair bit. Like, I'm still a noob, definitely fresh, but I'm purchasing stuff and I'm learning the difference between Ethereum and Bitcoin and other cryptos coming out. Awesome. And what the heck the blockchain is and what an NFT is. I just found out all this stuff in the last couple of weeks. And my brain is just like, but it's fascinating. It's fascinating. And it's exciting to know that there's a decentralized form of monetization out there without having it be run by the one like a family and like a system, know, essentially it's liberating. I don't know. So just to jump right into that, actually, I forgot we were even going to talk about it until right this second, but I'm enthralled. What is your background with it? Like, where did you start learning about it?
So I guess I probably first heard about it maybe like 2014, 2015 ish.
Wow.
I didn't really I think, know much about it. It was kind of back whenever it was bigger on like the dark web and people were using it for.
It was on the dark web? Wow.
Oh, yeah. That was the only, that was what they used back then. Oh, okay. Yeah,
I didn't know the history of it. Huh.
Oh, yeah. That was, I guess that's what it is. But... Oh, you don't?
No, well, I've heard of it, but I just like, I'm like, I have no idea what, where it is or what it looks like or anything like that. But
I mean, at a high level, it's like you kind of have to go through these different, let's say, protocols. Like you can't really sign into what would be like Google Chrome or something. You're not going to be able to like find it.
Right.
And so it's basically set up so that you can't be tracked. And, you know, there's an element of, you know, sending what would have been is Bitcoin. And they were essentially sending, you send someone Bitcoin and you get a, you know, you order whatever drugs you want to order and you get a box of sneakers and the sneakers are stuffed with all of your drugs.
That's wild. I didn't even know that was a thing.
I think it got shut down though in 2016-ish, I think. I had a buddy who, I actually had a group of friends who bought, I don't know, from what I remember, like at least $1,000 worth of drugs, and it got shut down like the next like day or so.
You're trying to experiment with the black web for the first time. Black web, what is it called? Oh, I sound like such a noob.
That's funny.
But that's too bad for them. But Bitcoin was on there initially. I didn't even know that. So how it came out into the mainstream, because the guy I've heard that invented it, he doesn't exist anymore.
The name is Satoshi. Satoshi Nakamoto. I believe I pronounced that correct.
Yeah, I think so. That sounds
right. Yeah, nobody really even knows if it's a person, if it's an organization. There's theories that are floating out there that it's actually like elements of the CIA, which I have no idea if that's true or not.
Would that be a way to steal everyone's money? I was wondering about that, but now it's so decentralized and I'm listening to this podcast called something of money. Oh damn, I could totally give them a plug right now too. It's such a great podcast, but it's more about the spirituality element of it as well as just like bringing it into how it functions and the decentralization and all the different elements that it takes. And it kind of alleviated some anxiety that I had around the potentials of it to be taken over by like a family or the CIA or something. Right. But when you say that, I'm like, if it's them, then we're fucked. But
we're pretty much good on that front. And maybe usually I think this is probably a better place to start is like why Bitcoin. And I think that's a huge like piece of this puzzle, right? Because I think if you understand everything that happens within, it's like, okay, great. But if you don't understand why this stuff's important, then I think a lot of the conversation gets lost. So
exactly. Yeah. So that's why I started with that podcast. It starts with the kind of the why, like why it's important to have.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And it ties in the decentralization and then it brings in spirituality as well, which I really resonated with.
Does it talk about the Federal Reserve?
It does not. I'm only on episode 8. So they're pretty long.
So there's a book and everything I'm about to kind of say, I highly recommend if you want to know a deep dive of this. It's called The Web of Debt.
Yeah, Web of Debt.
It's a pretty thick book, but it goes through like the history of money, right? It talks about, I haven't personally read it, but I've watched like lectures of the lady who wrote the book and, you know, kind of heard from other people what gets discussed. And, you know, without getting too deep into it, right? The whole point of money is to have a valid bartering system, right? Like if you have something I want, I need to give you something so that we have an equal trade on our hands.
Yeah.
And so what ended up occurring was, you know, it was initially like goods to goods. So if I had, let's say, a microphone and you had a video camera, like, you know, we would trade based off those things, but it becomes very difficult to find things of equal value in that sense. So the next step was to create essentially what we know today as fiat money, which is like physical, you know, money that's in circulation. Yeah. Think about the US dollar, the yen, the euro. And so people started creating those. And so essentially, you know, if we agreed upon the value of one US dollar, it became very easy for us to trade a microphone and all these things. Well, the problem was in that situation is that too many currencies were being made. So there were people who gathered on benches, and the French word for bench is something that sounds like the word bank. And so banks were initially created in order to have an equal transfer of currency, right? So like if you have you know, I don't know, a podcast coin and I have a Clayton coin, then we can't, like, what's the value of that relative to each other?
Yeah.
So banks became like this centralized thing to essentially delineate that trade between the currency. So as the whole story progresses, and you know, it goes on a wild ride, and along the way, in December of 1913, the U.S. government introduced the Federal Reserve. Well, the reason for the Federal Reserve, which first of all, it's not even associated with the federal government, which is a very common like misconception. It's essentially just a conglomerate of all the big banks. That's all the Federal Reserve is. And it was built for a need, let's say. I mean, there was a bunch of ups and downs in the economy. You know, people get scared of something, so they want, you know, other people to fix their fear. So we're going to put all their trust into the Federal Reserve. And the purpose of the Federal Reserve was essentially to regulate the U.S. economy. And in order for it to run smoothly, in theory, that was the whole purpose. It's fascinating how, you know, all this different compromise came in and all these different things. But regardless, I don't want to get too much into the details. I don't know that much. Mm-hmm. Its point was to regulate the economy. And in the Constitution, it says that you're not able to coin money. Well, back in the day, originally a coin of money was that just that, a piece of coin, right? It was like, silver or gold. And, you know, they had these actual coins. So the government said, well, we can't coin money, but now money's starting to move to paper. So now we can actually technically make it because it's not technically coin. And so this whole word game.
Yeah.
Around this time, and I don't know exactly when the transition happened, so this is something to definitely fact check, we came off of the gold standard, which the gold standard, for those who don't know, is that for every dollar that's in circulation, there needs to be a piece of gold that backs it up.
Yeah, this is what, now it's all on paper. And yeah, we've got a whole other issue there. Yeah,
exactly. And so around this time, we came away from that standard where now you can basically print money out of thin air. And
yeah. Even gold, apparently.
So essentially the way our current system is set up, right, is if you hear that the government printed, let's say, X trillion dollars, what they essentially did was they went to all the big banks and said, hey, we need money, give us money. And the big bank said, okay, we'll do that. And so we will just basically issue you just money. Now, what happens is that the Federal Reserve, which you probably hear a lot, is they set the interest rate. And again, let me remind you that the quote unquote Federal Reserve is technically all the private banks. It's the conglomerate of private banks.
And is it connected to the World Bank? Sorry if this is a silly question.
No, it's a good question. And
ball of wax.
That's a different rabbit hole off of all of this.
Okay. So many rabbit holes, so little time.
Yeah. There's something called just to briefly touch on that, there's something called like the IMF. And so then they basically, in short, they went and basically propped up like third world countries and said, hey, you know, your currency is unstable, match it off of the US dollar and we will prop up your currency. So it's actually quite genius what, in a nefarious
way.
Yes. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Sneaky buggers.
Yeah, exactly. It's, hey, if you believe in the United States, then match your dollar or match your coin, your fiat currency off of the dollar. Mm-hmm. And we will work with you to stabilize your economy. And whenever you're a country that is, not progressing in all these things, it's very tempting and easy to say, okay, sure. And so, yeah, that's kind of how, that's a brief overview of all the other countries. So where was I?
We were veering back into Bitcoin eventually, but I think
we're still on the why. We're still on the why.
The why part. Yes. Why there's Bitcoin. Okay. Right.
So the issue that has now accrued over the United States is you have all the private banks setting the interest rate, and I believe they've held it at 0%, which means if the US government goes to the Federal Reserve, i.e. the private banks, and says, hey, we need money, they will just give them the money at no interest whatsoever, which is, I don't know what to say about that. So the Federal Reserve, the big point of it is at zero. But as it kind of disseminates down to us at the lower level, they need to start adding interest to us so that they're able to make money for themselves. I mean, at the end of the day. So by the time that money gets down to us, there's a little bit more interest on it, but it's still lower than what we were paying before, because the mega structure of the banks determined that, well, we're going to just give it to the government at zero. And on top of that, if anyone's ever had college loans or tuition loans or massive loans with high interest, you know that you are almost always, if you're paying the bare minimum, you're almost always just paying the interest cost on it. Yes. And never really getting to the principal.
Yeah.
And so that is the issue that we currently have with the United States, where we're not even paying off the principal amount that we've borrowed. We're still trying to pay off now the interest that is
forever. Yeah.
Exactly. And you know, this
is their pockets, draining yours.
Exactly. Oh, and the Federal Reserve has made a tremendous amount of money.
There's not even a number to equate the dollar value of it, I'm sure. Like, it's probably insurmountable, I'm assuming.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
So I know that's a pretty convoluted way, right? But the problem is I think the fundamental problem, in my opinion, is that we have people trying to regulate other people in a sense, right? I don't care who you are. I don't care if it's myself. I don't care if it's you. I don't care if it's someone who claims to be the smartest person in the world. I personally don't believe, and this is a personal belief, that one person is able to possibly say how we can stabilize a dollar. Like, I just don't see how that's even possible. And I get that there's ways that you move interest rate, you can do certain things, but it's...
if we're printing money continuously and there's no end game, like with Bitcoin, for example, 21 million is the cap and then that's it.
Let's start with this. A basic economy, economics 101, right? Is supply demand, right? Yes. If you have a huge supply of stuff and you don't have demand for it, then it's worthless. If there's a huge demand and a small supply, then it becomes super valuable.
Yeah, like the housing market in British Columbia. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And so what's happening is they are just printing off money, like you even stated. And so you're just increasing the supply of it. Well, I mean, I guess demand will always kind of be there for it. But the issue is if you just keep, increasing supply, you have to create inflation.
Inflation, exactly.
And I personally don't understand how, you know, there's all these arguments that inflation isn't going to happen. It's not going to happen. But to me, I'm like,
it's already here. Like, it's everywhere every day. Like, food prices, rent prices, gasoline in Canada is like in British Columbia is obscene. Like, I had a friend visiting en route from Alaska back to the States, and he drove through and he was like, I don't even, how do you guys afford gas? Like, I don't even understand. And it's pretty bonkers. But that's where we see inflation, and people do, and they do it in such a microcosm amount, but around the spectrum of everything that we rely on, that it's kind of hard to really see it.
Exactly. No, that's a perfect like tie into every day. Is like, you see it. I mean, there's a beautiful graph that shows like the value of the dollar, and it like has the dollar outline, but then it's like shows it getting like kind of chiseled out, and it shows like how, you know, $10 today, $10 back like in 1913 when this started could buy you like $1,000 of stuff worth today. It's absolutely crazy. And so to that point, where are we going on this? Bitcoin, 21 million cap. So just at a high level, there will only be 21 million Bitcoin ever created. And that sets that supply limit on top of it. And right now, I think the demand is honestly pretty low for it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it does seem like it is. But we're at 17 million now, though, correct?
I think we're at like 19 million right now.
19, geez. Well, it's getting up there. I need to buy some more.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so crazy. Well, and so what happens is called halvings. So there's validators on. This is where it's going to start getting a little bit dicey, right? So. Let's take a look at let's try to take a step back here.
Okay.
You and I want to perform a transaction with each other. It's like, okay, I'm going to send you $100, right? It's like, okay, how do we verify that transaction is real? In present day, we use a bank. A bank says, okay, Clayton has 100, he can send it to it. And, you know, we're good. The way that Bitcoin works is essentially, okay, so another step back to the banks, right? The way they know that is because they can trace everywhere that the money has gone in order for it to get to my pocket.
Privately and then, quietly too.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, so that's, to yeah, be noted. That's, yeah. That's a whole nother thing.
Yeah. That but that's, it's a very valid point. Cause I know you're going to mention later what we see in Bitcoin. And it's really important to note that, and another reason sure. why we love Bitcoin. But sure. let's go back to the privacy and banks continue. Sorry. I just wanted to.
Sure. No, that's no, it's a good point, right? Because we don't know, we essentially don't know how any, where any money goes, right? You have no idea. Like the government printed $8 trillion, right? There's no way for us to see where exactly that money went, how it got spent. I mean, they have bills out there and some, whoever reads these 20,000 page bills, I don't even know who does. Like,
it's a scene, yeah.
I remember the stimulus. Let's not go down that rabbit hole. That'll
so many rabbit holes, so little time. Yeah.
So essentially the way blockchain works in general, the blockchain as a whole, is there's a ledger, and this ledger has the history of every single transaction that has occurred on it. And everybody has it. Everybody, essentially all the miners have it in actuality. We technically don't have it since we only have wallets, but you know, anyone who is mining or working on Bitcoin, they have the algorithm and they have a ledger. Mm-hmm. And with these two pieces of information, they're able to set up their machines that can verify transactions, right? So if I send you money, what happens is it technically becomes a spot on the ledger, or it gets sent to a miner who says, okay, can we validate, is this being a legitimate transaction? Mm-hmm. So they say, okay, what is the history of this? And they go and they look through, and Bitcoin's extremely inefficient at this, but you know, it is what it is. And they go through and say, okay, well, you know, Clayton has one Bitcoin and he's sending one Bitcoin. So let me see, where did he get his Bitcoin from? Okay. And it goes down and tracks the history of it.
Yeah.
And so Bitcoin's what it's called is a consensus mechanism. And Bitcoin's consensus mechanism is deemed proof of work, which is essentially what the miners are doing, is they're proving the transactions are legitimate through work, which is through like cryptographic sequences. And cryptography in its own right is a master's level engineering discipline, which I am not going to get into because that's not my cup of tea.
Right. Yeah. It sounds very complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's this process essentially that I send you money, they say it's valid, and then you get it. Everybody can see that. So it's publicly accessible, that transaction. And, you know, there's pros and cons to that being publicly accessible, but at the end of the day, we all know, you know, where the money's going, who transferred what. And, you know, there's pros and cons.
Transparency is a pro to me personally. Like if we would have followed and kept with that idealism of transparency, like you say, there's pros and cons to it. Personally, I don't see very many cons to it other than the fact that people that have something to hide want something to hide. And I don't think that's a very healthy society personally, if you're going to be on a macrocosm, you know. I don't think sure. it's very healthy to have to hide things.
The con in my eyes is just that, like, you know, in order for you to buy a cryptocurrency, you need to go onto like an exchange where you have to fill out like all your social security information and what. So if you go to somewhere like Binance or Coinbase or right. Kraken or any of these exchanges, they operate under, I think it's called KYC, which is essentially know your customer. So they have to report to the Federal Reserve IRS. Yeah. They have to report to the IRS, you know, all these things that they have. And so my personal belief is, I think the one drawback to crypto is it's not completely away yet. We're not completely away yet from the government knowing what we're doing with. Yeah. I mean, it's, gotcha. It's decentralized in its validation.
Right.
Yeah. But we're not like away from the government. Yeah.
We're not independent from we're not sovereign from
correct
whatever we're correct to. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Because whatever coin, whatever, let's say, because the fact that the ledger is public, whoever you operate with, let's say it's Coinbase, they have to report to the IRS. So the IRS and Coinbase both know that you have purchased cryptocurrency. They also know which wallets you've sent this cryptocurrency to. And at that point, since everything's public, they're able to trace it all and see where and what you did with all those right. coins, which I guess my argument is that it's at least a step away from the issue we have with fiat currencies. And I think I just see that as like the next kind of barrier that we have to figure out how to get past.
Right. Yeah, that would be an interesting barrier to try and get past. I can't even wrap my head around that. That's beyond our pay grade, I think.
That's the next step. Yeah.
We'll stick to podcasting and talking about Bitcoin. I was trading Forex actually last year. I still am sometimes, but now I'm really getting into crypto and I like learning about it. So Forex to me is just like, sure, you can check a couple charts in on certain websites and you can kind of see if there was something like going on in their economy. And so you'd have a better chance at knowing which currency is going to go up or down. And then, so like there was that, but with crypto, it's like, you're also looking at long-term, you're studying the technology and you're studying what those companies are doing and where they're heading. And you kind of, and it's more interesting to me. So I kind of like, I haven't been trading Forex for a while now because I'm trying to learn about crypto, but it's just like, every time I open up a new door, I'm down this rabbit hole.
Yeah.
I spent a whole like day on NFTs the other day and I was like, holy man.
Those are wild in their own right.
I know. Yeah, I'm so excited those are though, wild. Because I have some interesting things that might just fly, you know, some personal recordings of famous people. And I'm like, I wonder if I could sell that.
Yeah, I think you probably could.
Never know. Yeah, some backstage.
Find your market.
Like, why not? I know. So I'm like really excited to dive into that next week. But
that's awesome.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, I was going to circle back because we were talking about the 21 million coins and you were asking about how. Yeah. So what essentially happens is every 4 years, there's what's called a halving. So they cut the rewards in half. Right. So remember how we were saying, like, if I pay you something, we need a validator or miner to validate that transaction exists.
Yeah.
Well, I pay some of that fee to them to validate it, but then they also are going to get a fee for essentially adding another block onto the blockchain.
Right.
So every validator that's worked on that block is going to get paid out from the, you know, the background of Bitcoin to make more Bitcoin. The technology is the way that Bitcoin is set up is that, it's programmed that once you complete an entire block of the blockchain, you get paid out a little bit of Bitcoin. Okay, and so that's how more Bitcoin is getting added into circulation. And so then there's what's called the halvings. And every 4 years, there's a halving, which means they have the amount of the algorithm, the code halves the amount of money that they provide to the miners. And so honestly, I don't think the last halving is until like 2034-ish. So, or 2030, one of the two. So there will still be more. Yeah. So these last like 2 million, it takes a while for it to actually get into circulation.
I see.
But if you look at like the past, every time these halvings occur, the value just jumps within like a month or two after it, you know?
Crazy. When was the last halving?
That's a good question. I don't want to make a guess. I don't want to guess and put that out there.
That's all good. Yeah. I'm just going to make a note to like look it up because I'm curious if it was prior to me. Because I actually accidentally ended up with Bitcoin because I had to open up ShakePay and purchase them to trade high frequency, what's called high frequency Forex, which is just really you're trading micro bits of currency. And I was trading that. In order to do that, I had to open up the ShakePay account and get Bitcoin because I could only trade with this one broker with Bitcoin. Okay. And so I had some left over because I didn't want to move everything into this account and just in case I blew it because I'd never tried HFX before. And I was like, okay, I'll just move this much in there and I'll leave whatever my residual. I had the minimum amount to open the account. And then I think I had $130 left over in my Bitcoin account, which is now... it's like a lot more. And it was just random accidental like loose change in the bottom of my purse that just, you know.
Oh wow. So I found the numbers that I was looking for here.
No, you totally didn't. I was rambling.
The number's actually a lot further than what I initially said, and I'm glad we got the right information here. We actually got a lot longer. The last halving will actually occur, or the last Bitcoin will be minted in 2140.
Oh wow, that's so far away.
Yeah, so it kind of shows you that it almost like decreases exponentially about how much they've put into circulation. And the last halving was in 2020, which I was gonna guess.
That makes sense. Actually, that makes a lot of sense because that is exactly what I would have probably. And that's the reason for my jump then, because it was an obscene jump. Yeah.
And I mean, quite frankly, based on the way the market's happening right now, I would like to preface this is not financial advice.
This is not financial advice.
None of this is financial advice.
No.
Based on how the market's performing right now, my personal guess of what's about to happen is And again, not financial advice. And I think everybody has opinions. Nobody knows for sure. I guess this is the first time I've ever recorded a prediction. So I just want to,
really stamp it out there. As soon as when I record this, I'll just have not financial advice and a little banner right below your face. Okay, continue.
Just be like, this is purely for like an ego standpoint, because I want to see if my prediction's right.
Be your own Nostradamus.
Yeah, let's see. I think it's like performing at like, I don't know, it might be at like 60K right now. What I think is about to happen is it's probably about to go to like 280, 250K. And then I think, and that's probably over the next like 3 or 4 months. And I think that's my guess.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I like your guess again, though, but
yeah. Let's be optimistic.
Yes.
It'll probably correct down to like 120K ish. And then it'll probably sit around there for a while. And then who knows from there, but that's probably my guess over the next, I would probably see that trajectory happening over like the next 6 months of it going to about 250, let's say, and then go down to like 120 and then chill around there for a year or so.
Cool. I like that prediction a lot. I keep meaning to get back into I got really sidetracked this week with the crypto and stuff. So I need to get back on track so I can start getting what's called the cold wallet and getting all that stuff in line. And that's really important, things I wouldn't have known about had I not done my own research and connected with other people on YouTube and stuff that are not connected with them, but watch their videos. Yeah. I want to have Crypto Casey on here. She's amazing. I love her. Have you watched any of her videos?
No,
yeah. Oh, she's great. She's just like 101 stuff. And this is where I've gotten most of my info from. So she's been very helpful.
End of the day, keep it basic, you know?
Yeah, totally. And I have, and that's exactly how I've understood it. Cause I started with the initial element of why, and that's what that podcast was all about. But they just talked about the why and it brought it into spirituality and stuff and religion. They're even talking about it as a religion. And I was like, okay, this is getting deep, but I'm still on board. I'm still following. But what is your take on it with that?
Which part?
Just the spirituality. It's more of it's like a following that I've never quite seen before.
Bitcoin, you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's actually a pretty interesting comparison, because I follow it like on Reddit, and it's a very, I don't know, it's kind of, Reddit's a very bizarre place. And
you can find any question to any answer that you would ever want on Reddit, and none of them line up. So
you can find any answer you want to, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, but what stuck out to me about that was the religion aspect of it, because if we take a step back where I'm talking about the Federal Reserve, I started watching like kind of different YouTube videos in preparation for this, and like it seemed like this information wasn't really out there. Like it's almost kind of hidden that the Federal Reserve is actually not a part of the federal government. And I don't know that people don't fully understand that. Like, it's kind of, it's just bizarre in my mind. Like, I don't understand how it's, and I've even talked to, I've heard people say that like, oh, and what I just said, and maybe we'll get people who say that I'm completely wrong on that, because I've heard that people have said that it's completely wrong, that that's not how it works. And I've like looked at it and I'm like, I don't know if it's like a religion aspect where people are like, they don't want to believe that that's kind of how it is. Like the fact that the federal government doesn't have control over the federal banks. Like it's like our entire monetary system is not controlled by the federal government. Like,
no.
Maybe that's just like a hard thing for people to hear. And so
people want to have all faith in their governmental systems. They don't want to believe that there's anything nefarious, to use that word again, going on within. And we're seeing a lot of that right now. People disregarding very valid, very substantiated information that they're just refusing to look at because it goes beyond what their scope of understanding is. And it's scary, you know, and I get that. Like, I understand. And it takes a huge amount of courage to look past your fears and see that there's other options for information out there. And that's like a good chance that that's correct as well. And you know, there's truths and lies and everything, and every bit of information you're going to find fragments of each. So I think it's really challenging to move past that fear and be like, oh, so what I've known my whole life or what I've understood my whole life may be incorrect. And you have to strip your ego down in order to get to that point, you know, because the ego loves to be right.
Yeah. I mean, it was the core of my prediction at the beginning of this.
For the prediction of Bitcoin. Right?
At least
you're aware of that. And there was also, it was aiming to to like predict some positivity rather than. But I mean, the ego, when it needs to be right, even when you're blocking out very important information that could do with your survival or the survival of a society or humanity, and you're refusing to look at it because you're fearful, and even you might not recognize that you're fearful. I think sometimes it's under so many layers of crap that we're not even willing to. And that's a whole other rabbit hole I just went down. Well, but it's something that's super relevant right now. So
that's what my course is for. So great. That's a perfect.
Awesome. Totally. Yeah. And while we're on the topic of your course, I'm really interested to hear more about it. I know you've kind of touched on it a little bit. So getting through blockages and getting over our egos, getting over ourselves to find your higher purpose and to find out what you're
built for. Send it once I finish it and everything. I'd love to send you it because it's gonna be one of those things I think I need to at least send out to people to kind of get their opinion on, get some feedback.
Definitely.
Getting testimonials, case studies, getting that.
I'm here. It sounds like something I would want to take. Yeah. So definitely send it along.
Especially, you're talking about the dark night of the soul and everything, and like I need to find a way to kind of like work that in.
It might be a light brooch depending on your demographic, because when I've mentioned Dark Night of the Soul to some people, they're like, what now? What the fuck are you talking about, crazy witch lady? Like, oh man. But other people are like, oh yeah, I feel you. Like, and they just get it. There's a resonance there and they understand. Yeah. But it's a polarity. It's like some people really do and some people really don't, unless you've experienced it. You really don't pretty much. Like, you can read it all you want until you have to go through it. And it's not just the one time. Like, I've been through a few and we'll probably continue to go through them for the rest of my life. And I hope, because that's just a deepening, and that's more of an ascensioning and a deepening all at the same time, like you're getting more grounded and more ascended all at once. And
there's a great Carl Jung quote. It's no tree can reach its leaves into heaven without its roots reaching down to hell.
I'm right. It's down to hell. Ooh, I just got goosebumps. Yeah. Awesome. Right on. Yes, I love Carl Jung. I've read a lot of him in university, but haven't really since. But did we get off topic with our Bitcoin? I can't remember
we're definitely not talking about it anymore.
No. No, we're not. I just wanted to make sure that we had all the topics covered that we want to talk about that. And you think the audience would have gotten enough about it? And if not, like, reach out to you on YouTube or Instagram.
I love talking about it with people.
Yeah, totally. So what's your Instagram handle and people can reach out to you?
Personal Instagram handle is just Clayton Cuteri, CLAYTONCUTERI. And then my podcast is my first name, last name, Clay and Cuteri Takes on the World. And then,
which is awesome, by the way. I've been listening to some episodes. Yeah. Go give them a listen. Yeah, definitely. And YouTube.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime.
YouTube, all the streaming services, Spotify, Apple. Yeah. I think some of the videos, there's like, for YouTube, you can kind of see different things. You get different energy from watching it. It's basically, I'm not sure if we were talking about this before, but it's basically just me figuring out how people found their life purpose and like found their journey and, this whole discovery thing. And so I think my whole like resonating thing was, okay, I'm going to take that and just put it into this course and condense it. Cause it took me my entire life, but at least, 4 years to figure out how to create that life. And so hopefully this course can help you figure it out a little bit quicker than that. But awesome. There's definitely some things in there you need to be doing actively all the time, meditating, eating healthy, stuff like that. But
those are the daily regulars. I mean, for the most part, I fluctuate, but I also transmute. So when I do something that may not be the absolute best for me, I know it on a very conscious level. But I'm also on a very subconscious level. I'm like, screw this. This is my body. This is my 3D reality. Anything that I'm doing now can be fully transmuted. I don't look at it as like, I'm doing it because it's bad. I'm doing whatever it is that I'm doing, eating that pizza, drinking my coffee in the morning, which I don't think is bad. And it's, don't take away that my last bit of joy. Thank you, anyone. And having my cocktails, it's like, I don't look at that as being the worst thing for me, but I do think a lot of it is perception. And I think a lot of it is how we feel when we're doing it. If we're doing it to feel something negative, if we're doing it because it's freaking fun, positive. And if you haven't done the work around that, then you don't know the difference between negative and fun. You know what I mean? Your right. reactions to things, like how you are when you eat junk food. Can you have a square of chocolate and then put the rest in the thing? Or do you like shovel the whole thing in your mouth? Like there are differences.
Guilty.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I think that like, so when people say eating healthy, I'm like, well, I'm not actually the best, but I also have, when I'm doing the things that I know may not be the best, I know I have the best right. intentions for myself. You know,
there's a crazy, yeah, oh, 100%. There's a book called Intuitive Eating. And so this is also something that relates back to the course. I'm going to be dropping like all these books that I've kind of read throughout, because honestly, I found so many books that have just resonated with me. And I'm like, holy shit, like, you know, this is what I've been looking for. But to get back to your thing, it's called Intuitive Eating. And the whole purpose of it is to be in tune with your body and understand why you're eating and what you're eating for. Because, you know, that book, it goes down the list of type of dieters there are. And I fell into the category of a professional dieter, where I tried every single, I tried every single diet. I was like, all right, I'm not eating any of this. I'm not eating any of that.
I'm like the total opposite of you. I've never done that once in my life.
No,
I never saw any point to it, for one. And for two,
okay.
I just can't commit to anything for that long. I'm like, not eat like a piece of bread. I'm like, that doesn't, sure, my willpower could do it, but I didn't find the necessity. Right. And if you don't find the necessity, then there's no connection there. And I was just like, I don't see the point. What's the point? So I personally haven't, but good for you for doing it.
No, I mean, because that's
willpower. It is willpower.
Oh, it's certainly discipline, a level of discipline to it.
Yeah, discipline. But, that's what I was looking for. Yeah.
But I don't know that I would label it as healthy discipline. Yeah, because a couple of things here. Number one, I think it's a level of like, you know, when you tell yourself not to do something, you end up kind of wanting to do it more. And then the actual layer of that, and what the intuitive eating book gets to, is it talks about how, you know, you need to be in tune with what you want, like, and what you need and what you eat and what your body actually needs to feel nourished. Like, do you need fruits? Are you actually thirsty? Are you like, maybe you do want a chocolate bar. Like, it's okay to have like one, but if you're eating, you know, 10, now there's like a little bit of an imbalance here, you know?
It's all about balance. Yeah. It really boils down to balance for sure. So I do my like, yeah, my stints of making sure that my organic green intake is on point and my smoothies are happening, which I just started doing again recently, and those things. But then I can counterbalance it with whatever the heck I want. And I eat chocolate every single day of my life, but I have one spare, and that's all I feel like I need. And it's a way for me to stop eating at the end of the night, because I'll just get snacky.
It sounds like a super healthy relationship you have with food.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. I've never really questioned it too much. I just know I've never had an issue with it, you know?
Yeah.
And my body needs certain things too, because I'm active and like just naturally like, you know, and active.
I was going to say, you look like fit. It's not like you have like any, you know, weight issues. I mean, your skin looks good. Like, you know, it all seems
pretty.
And that's
another thing. It comes out in your skin. I've eaten crappily and it still hasn't come out in my skin, because I think I'm looking at the food with love. I'm not looking at the food like, this is bad.
Oh, you know? For sure. And sometimes it's so what you're harder. Not eating. And I love this.
Yeah.
I think your audience is a little bit on the spiritual side. So I'll throw this in there. I'm not sure if I've mentioned this in a couple of my podcasts, but I had like really bad, like kind of neck acne, kind of like on the side of my neck. And I've tried so many different things. I thought it was my pillows. I thought it was this or that, or wearing collared shirts. Or what I came to realize is, in my whole, let's say, spiritual awakening, was the whole chakra system. Well, you know, colors represent different things. Yeah. There's different fruits, different colors.
Yeah.
You know, why do we see different colors? I'm kind of giving a high over view, but it came to the color blue for throat chakra. I was like, you know, I never really eat any blueberries. So I wonder, you know, if this is the missing piece. And so for like the next 3 days, I probably ate like 4 cartons, like of blueberries, unhealthy amount. But I saw my neck, like it was like night and day. It was like completely cleared up. Like everything was solid. I was like, holy shit. You know, it was like, this was the missing piece of my, let's say, diet. It's like, okay, this my body's reacting because it's missing something, you know, it's not getting all the nutrients it needs. And there's an element of placebo versus like reality, but
you know, whatever works too though, right? Yeah. But it's funny though that people our society and culture is always about takeaway culture, like take this out, take that out. I like how you're adding things. That's a nice pendulum swing that you don't hear about very often. Yeah, they're the magic bean. They are. great.
Was there any other questions you had about Bitcoin?
No, yeah. I think we covered in all the juicy, glorious details that we were aiming to cover, plus a lot of juicy, glorious details that we didn't aim to cover at the beginning of our conversation, which I'm going to try and work in. So again,
yeah, I'd love to hear
chops and some weird stuff, then that's me just working some cool shit in, because yeah. It's definitely worth noting.
It bounced around a little bit.
Conversations, yeah, might bounce around. Yeah. But hey, that's podcasting for you.
Yeah, that's the point of it, right?
I'm so glad I reached out on Telegram. I don't do that often, but I saw on the podcasting group that you just touched on a lot of similar topics to my podcast, okay. And I love collaborating with like-minded podcast. And in fact, all my guests recently have had similar style with their own kind of flair of a podcast. So. Really, well,
I'm definitely going to bring you on my podcast, and we'll talk about your journey, and we'll figure that out.
It's a long one. Yeah, I'm glad your podcast is long. So.
Yeah,
yours are a good solid hour and a half. I love them. Yeah. That's an
hour and a half,
deep 2 hours. Dive. Yeah, it's a good deep.
It's dive. Really just however long it takes. I mean, you know, again, the end goal is just to hear about your process and see how life threw you on the washing machine and yeah. You know, spit you out on the other side.
I got the the washboard myself.
You got the washboard treatment. The old washboard treatment.
Yeah, it wasn't as yeah. I didn't get no gentle cycle. No,
put it on tumble.
Yeah. Pretty much. So funny. Awesome. Well, I think we're probably at the end of our time anyways. I don't know what happens to Zoom when we reach the end, but thank you so much for coming on. This is a brilliant conversation and all your insights. And I'm going to pick your brain some more about Bitcoin in the future for sure.
Love it. Yeah. It's definitely the start of the whole Bitcoin rabbit hole. Like, absolutely. You know, we only talked about like one consensus mechanism, which was like the proof of work. And, you know, there has to be at least like 12 to 15 different consensus mechanisms now. And
oh, holy, yeah, I don't even know what a consensus mechanism is yet. I haven't gotten that far, but
yeah, proof of work is Bitcoin. I'll tell you that.
Oh, yes.
And then the next big one is proof of stake.
Oh, okay. That's another whole other conversation. Yeah. I guess this will be like maybe part one too. And I did that with another girl too. And when my, I guess it wasn't my audience, but I guess in this case it would be when my audience got a chance to take the information, regurgitate, understand what the heck this is, and part two to dive in a little deeper, which is that podcast that I listen to, which I'm going to put in the show notes anyways, because I've mentioned it so many times and I cannot for the life of me. It'll just be in here. Oh, what is money? I just found it.
What is
money? All right. Yeah. Okay. What is money? The What Is Money show.
Okay.
No,
I'd love to check it out.
Yeah. It has, what's his name? Oh, Michael Saylor is his name. And Michael Saylor joins me to discuss anthropology, energy, and technology from principles that we build the intellectual properties. So like they get into some pretty intense that it vibes with me fully. So I think
it's all that matters. With
you.
End of the
exactly.
Day.
I think you would really, you would enjoy it as well.
Yeah. And I'm all down for round two. I mean, I know if this was like choppy and whatnot, we'll have to see what your audience thinks. And, you know, maybe there's questions.
They'll
we can
like
answer.
It. You're going to like it. You're going
you
to take
like it,
it and you're going to like it. Just too damn bad. Yeah. Anyways. So awesome, Clayton. Thank you so much for being here.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime. And thanks everyone for joining us. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave me a review, whatever the heck, share this with your friends, your dog, your cat, your mom. I'd really appreciate it. Okay, awesome.